Wow, did I forget to turn my microphone on this whole time?
I didn't hear anything.
Were we just talking about that? We were just talking about that. I think you jinxed me. that's hilarious. I was like, okay, I just turned yours on, and then I looked down. I was like, mine's not even on. I just did the whole intro without. Well, welcome to the show, Susan.
Thank you.
Welcome to the Librarian on Authors on the Air. I'll just wait and do my stuff at the end. How about that?
No, I just thought, wow, normally I can hear when they're talking, but I'm just going to wait here. I'm going to go with it.
Well, I'm glad you went with it. Too bad that I didn't, that great bio that I just read out loud to everybody.
Oh,
no one heard it.
I think that's fine.
That's okay. I think your name precedes you, and everybody knows that we are talking to Susan Mallory tonight, who has topped the New York Times best-selling list very, very many times, and so we'll just go ahead and talk.
I think that works perfectly.
That's hilarious. I'm sorry. I'm going to laugh at myself much later about this. So welcome from the West Coast. I hope that you're going to warm up a little bit for the spring. And we were talking a little bit before the show about how crazy this weather's been. So do you let's talk. The bio that I was supposed to read talks about how you write about the relationships that define women's lives. And your style of writing is it's women's fiction and romance kind of combined, because you really do a lot about the women's friendships and their families and the things that the different relationships that they occur in. So you can't really pigeonhole, and I say you hit on the romance list all the time, but you really do write a very beautiful blend of romantic women's fiction, if I could call it that. I don't know if I'm qualified to call it that, but that's exactly what I would call it. What do you think about those relationships that really kind of tell the story about the woman better than just, you know, her romantic endeavors?
Well, I think I love a romance. I grew up reading romance. It's my favorite. And that has a place that's really important. In addition to that, though, I think in our non-fantasy lives, you can't always, you know, have the hunky cowboy come through with ice cream because you've had a bad day. Life just isn't that tidy. I think what really is the most important thing to women is all our relationships. I think we're not just defined by our relationships, but they are who we are. I mean, we are really the elements of who we love and who loves us. And
sure.
And that is so integral. And so for me, writing the women's fiction allows me I get to explore it from both sides. So the boy meets girl, you know, the flush of excitement. I mean, there is nothing in the world as powerful as those hormones when you're feeling it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what also sustains us through when that goes awry or a rough patch or whatever is the other relationships in our lives. And those can be a real constant. And so to write about that, I just find it really interesting because, you know, there are a few things more complex than being a daughter and a mother. And, you know, so it's all of that. And I think women and men really, we both need relationships, but we approach them very, very differently. So I like that part of it. And what I like is the way my writing schedule is, I do a women's fiction, and just when I'm wrapping it up, it's like, can't somebody be kissing? And then I get to jump into a romance. And after a couple romances, I'm thinking, I'd like to do something a little bit more than this. And then I get to do my hardcovers are what they're defining them as romance plus. So it is there is a romance, and it's sort of like if my women's fiction and my romance had a baby,
right.
Don't try to visualize. it would be the hardcovers I do. So I really get to go from one to the other to the other. So for me personally as a writer, it's very satisfying because I get to do a whole bunch of things and I enjoy them all, and I'm always anticipating what I get to do next. and I sometimes I think that kind of you can feel it in the work when you read it. It's like, oh, she was having a good day. And I think that's important.
When you go back and read your own work, do you feel that way too? Do you go, oh, yeah, I was having a good writing day then?
No, I can't tell, which is really nice. I can't tell if it was a good day or a bad day, which is great because when you're struggling, you don't want it to be on the page. I almost never know. There have been a couple of things where I was writing a book and I lost a parent. So that one I know. But unless it's really that traumatic, I can't tell you when I read it what I was doing, good day, bad day.
Mm-hmm.
Which I really appreciate because the reader doesn't want to know I was having a bad day. My job is to take care of her, not the other way around. So
right. The
work should be seamless.
Well, many people see reading romance in general or romantic stories as kind of their chance to take a break from reality, just a mind break and they know that there's going to be a happy ending at the end, get their HEA. What do you think about reading? What do you think reading provides, or what do you hope to provide to a reader?
I agree with that. I think there is, reading does provide an escape. And I come at it from, of course, the other side. I'm providing a contract with my reader. I am, if you pick up a Susan Mallory book, you know, my goal is I'm going to suck you into my world really, really fast. You're going to have a great relationship with these characters. Some you're going to want to be best friends with. Some you're going to want to back the car over. I'm going to, you know, hopefully make you laugh and make you cry. And when it's done, make you want to go buy the next one. That's what I want to have happen. I do pay attention to my readers. I try to pay attention to likes and dislikes. There are a lot of writers, oh, this is what I do, and you can like it or not like it, but this is what I do. And I'm like way too, oh, let's all get along. So I like the feedback that I get, especially now with social media. It's very immediate. And if readers as a collective kind of don't like an element, I think about why. And is it something I want to do again? Did I do it wrong? A lot of times the element's fine, I just executed it poorly or I didn't get what I wanted. So then I try to do it correctly the next time sort of thing. So I enjoy the interaction, I enjoy the feedback. But, yeah, it is an escape. The world is a crazy place. And I want to be a very dependable, wonderful read that you look forward to my books. And if you're waiting in a hospital waiting room, I want to be there with you and kind of take you away
lovely.
As much as I can.
Do you get a lot of feedback from readers that that say that reading one of their books kept them, you know, got them through a hard time or anything like that?
Yeah, I get a lot of that. I get a fair amount of that where it's, I know someone who has a friend who's blind and she actually reads my books aloud to her. I know people who have been in the hospital, literally, or they, if I have a trilogy or something, they hold it because they're going to go through chemo and they want to read it. So that's a big responsibility.
Oh, wow.
It's very heartening. So on the days I think, wow, I'd rather be doing something else, it's like I just gently slap myself upside the head and say, come on, show up. It's not a difficult job. So, and I get to pet my cats whenever I want. So, yeah, I think it's important. On the one hand, what writers do is hard to define. On the other hand, when somebody feels awful, the ability to give them the gift of escape for a couple of hours is really impressive. I mean, to be able to do that for someone I will never meet, it's humbling, and it's something I take very seriously.
Yeah. It is a big responsibility when you think on that side of it, and that makes your willingness to listen to your readers even more important because they find you dependable and find you, worthy of their spending their time because it's a time investment. I mean, whether, like you're saying, they hold it off so that they can do, because they know they're going to be sitting for a long trip, or like you were saying, chemo or something like that. Or, you know, moms like me who have that 30 minutes that you might get to read in a day. And, you know, that 30 minutes is precious time. I could go to sleep because I'm exhausted, or I can use that 30 minutes to read. So, you know, time's precious. So it's a huge thing for someone either way to invest their time in a book. So, yeah. But it's a wonderful thing that words can make magic like that, too.
Oh, I agree. It really is the idea that, you know, the scene I wrote today that made me laugh is a year from now when the book is out going to make someone else laugh. And I look forward to the conversation we're going to have on Facebook or whatever about this particular scene, because at this point I can usually tell what's going to, you know, get the most response, although I'm frequently surprised. But it's like, I can't believe I have to wait a year to talk about this. So, but that part's fun.
Yeah. So you've been at this for a while. And you started back in during a time when publishing was a much different world. I mean, it's so completely changed, even in the last 10 years.
But, oh, yeah.
You know, even further back, it was just completely different. What do you see as being a good change and maybe a drawback?
Well, I think one of the most interesting changes is there aren't any more gatekeepers. I published, I started writing in college, and my first book was out in 1992. I was three. No. And it was very hard. I sold to Berkeley, who's still in business, and I sold to Harlequin. Back then they owned Silhouette Books, so I really sold on the Silhouette side. And there were very serious gatekeepers. And now you can, with a few clicks of a mouse, self-publish. And so one of the things that was interesting is we all used to lament, especially when I was starting out, when I used to write the little category books, and then when I moved to single title, the lament of the print run, you know, if only they would put more books out there, I too could be, you know, Debbie Macomber. Well, as soon as digital became a real thing, we in essence all have an infinite number of books out there. And that became a real eye-opener. It's like, yeah, see, not so much with the running to buy 5,000 copies a day of your book. So that was, I think, freeing for some people, humbling for others. It's easier to browse in a bookstore than to browse online, and publishers have yet to solve the browse problem. Yes, I loved this author's book. I want more exactly like this. And that doesn't yet exist. And so the browsing is hard, whereas when it's a real book, you can pick it up, read the back, flip through a couple of pages, and then make your decision. So I think the lack of, for the reader, you know, books have gotten less expensive, especially digitally. They're very available. It doesn't matter what you want to read. If your fantasy book is, you know, giraffes falling in love on Jupiter, I bet that exists. So anybody can read anything. I don't believe, just because you can doesn't mean you should. And I'm sure we've all read the free book that was like, probably needed a little bit of editing on that. Or spell check. So we've all done that. So that's not so good. But I think the freedom, the ability to find what you want, and for anybody to be published. It's funny because I've only been traditionally published my whole career, and I continue to be traditionally published. I am still, all these years later, still published by Harlequin. I have had other relationships, but I have always come home to them. And so I, in fact, have been under contract with Harlequin since 1992.
Wow.
Or 91, I guess. Yeah. Yes, I figured that out a couple years ago. It was like, whoa.
That's awesome.
I know things.
What a legacy.
So it's been interesting to watch this happen. And occasionally, you know, a few, you know, 7 or 8 years ago, the siren allure of, oh, I could, no, I'm, I am desperately unfocused. I'm good with the writing. Everything else is hard for me, so I couldn't possibly be my own publisher. And I have the world's most amazing virtual assistant, and she has threatened to beat me with a stick if I ever said I would. It's like she's like, I'm too busy now. No, we can't do that. So, so I think there is both good and bad, both mm-hmm. from my side and from the reader side. So, you know, but it's certainly made things interesting.
Yeah. Do you think though that you know the free books that fall on their face when you read them? Do you feel like they have made the self-publishing seem unreliable to the readers? I mean, sometimes I do because I'm not going to lie. I'm a BookBub addict, and I check out the free ones first. I'm not going to lie. But I have found, you know, I download stuff for my husband all the time, and he loves it. But he's not into the relationship part with the story like I am.
Well, I think it depends on who you are as a reader and what your tolerance level is. I know people who don't care. If it's free and it's not very good, who cares? It's free. I've fallen into your camp, I think, where I have a very limited amount of time to read. And worse, I can't read romance when I'm writing romance, and it's my favorite thing mm-hmm. to read. And so I can only really read when I'm between books, which isn't very much of the year. I write 4 books a year. So, you know, when I get my 15 minutes of reading time, it better dazzle me. So I and possibly because I'm a writer, it's really hard for me to read a badly written book. I just have no patience for it. But for other readers who don't care, and the writing style, they're just entertained by the story, and that sort of thing doesn't, then it's fantastic. The thing as a writer that I find depressing, somebody I know said, oh, I've got a new series, and I'm putting the first book up for free. And I went to download it, and it was like number 1,274 on the free Amazon list. That I couldn't stand that. That would just, I would be so depressed. I mean, I would just drown in a vat of Ben and Jerry's. I couldn't do it. I could not work however many months, write a book, put it up for free, and then be number 1,274. I can't tell you how painful that would be.
Those numbers kill people.
I know. I mean, it's hard enough.
Basically, I'm like, oh.
Yes, because it's funny. Anybody thinks about this, but, you know, when it's, you do your work, your boss calls you in, you have your evaluation, it's between you and your boss, and you tell who you want to tell. And if somebody else says, oh, well, Mark doesn't do a very good job, that's between whoever Mark's not friend is telling them. In our business, in my business, my report cards, my evaluations are all very public. As far as my publisher is concerned, it's where do I hit on the list. It's all numbers.
Right.
And everybody can go look at where I am on USA Today. And my reviews, if, you know, somebody doesn't like what I do, they put something out there. And I don't get to sit down with them and say, okay, yes, I didn't do a good job that day, but I had the flu and I came to work anyway. I don't ever get to go back and say, really? Because I know what I was thinking. There's no, it's not two-way communication, but it's very public. And there's a rule. I am not allowed to read bad reviews because I will not work for 3 days. And I, to this day, can recite them to you word for word. Can't tell you a single good review. So I have not actually gone online and searched reviews probably in 5 years. They're sent to me.
Oh, wow.
But I can't afford to not work for 3 days because I'm, you know, in the corner of my office rocking gently and sobbing because some lady in Kansas thinks I phoned it in. It's devastating to me.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, that it's very public. And it's like, yes, you know, I'm an introvert. If I could do like a real job, I probably would, but I can't. So
you're right.
Don't be mean to me. I worked really hard.
Don't pick on me. Yeah.
I know.
Well,
so
and you
to
put
have
your
that,
heart and soul into it. Yeah.
I know. And to do that and then sell your book for free.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how they do it.
Yeah.
It would be so painful. It's like, can't I just give you my kidney and move on? It's just, yeah, no, it would be really awful. And it's funny because I have a very strong work ethic. I'm like, show up and do the work. Get your butt in the chair, and it's all about the work. Don't whine to me about the other stuff. And I have the volume of work to prove it. I've been writing a lot of books for a long time. But, and so I have this reputation of, you know, I'm very business-oriented and I'm very – but underneath that, I am just as, like, broken bunny as every other writer out there, you know, whimpering on the inside. So, yeah.
Yeah. So you have your reviews sent to you then? Someone sends you the
I
good
have
ones?
Them. They're carefully curated, yes.
Oh, good.
And it's funny because on Amazon when I have a book out and I want to see my ranking – I really wish they'd reformat the page because right below that is where the reviews start. So I have to scroll down incredibly slowly because I have accidentally read the top review. And it's fine if it's 4 or 4.5 stars, but occasionally it's not. And I'm like, and then I'm just, and then once I've read one, you know, it's like when you break your diet, you have that one M&M, it's over.
Yeah.
Just go get the garlic bread and a bottle of wine and call it a night.
Right.
And then I start looking, and then everybody knows because then I send out these, you know, sobby emails. Why do they hate me? I work. Yeah. Oh, it's a nightmare.
Oh, see, people, even Susan Mallory has her
as crazy
days.
As everyone else. Oh, yeah. No, it's true.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, people will probably think, oh, well, but at this point, you know, you're working on 25 years,
probably, yeah,
6 years, something like that, that it shouldn't be any skin off your nose. But, yeah, no, that's your baby. I don't care. You have 4 babies a year, you know.
Yeah, it is, and it's so – okay, so this has been years and years. I had a series. It was called The Bakery Sisters. It was like, I don't even know, 2005, 2006, somewhere around there. And it was Sweet Talk, Sweet Spot, and Sweet Trouble were the books. And the middle one is Sweet Spot, and the heroine's name is Nicole. And I had so many reviews on her saying, what a bitch she is. And I'm like, she's the most like me. She really is, of a lot of my heroines. And I'm like, no, see, she's very crunchy on the outside, but so sweet and tender. How can you not see how, so those were the worst because I'm like, oh my God, they hate me. And I'm really, you know, but so yes, it's never, I think if it went away, the books wouldn't work anymore. Because if I don't care passionately, why should you care passionately? If I don't pour my heart and soul into it, why would you want to read it?
Right. And you've got to have that or, you know, it's not going to come out authentic. It's just going to be forced. You putting words on the page. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree with that completely. I do. I'm not laughing at you. I'm just laughing at
you. No, you can laugh at me. It's fine. I'm used to it. Not a problem.
So you, let's see, we're about halfway and I'm going to put the number out because in case people want to call so that we don't run to the end without being able to get everyone on. It's 347-633-9609 if you want to call in to speak to Susan Mallory. Okay, so you're a very busy woman. You have a regular daily schedule that you keep with your rock. We're talking about work ethic, getting yourself in the chair and how does it generally work with your 4 books a year? You write and then you have to stop and edit for the one that's about to come out and go back to writing, or how does it usually work for you?
I always am a year up. So right now A Million Little Things is out. I just finished the next trade book, the next women's fiction.
Okay.
So I'm always a year ahead. And I have a very, I've been, as you said, I've been doing this a long time. I've written over 150 books. So I have worked out my process over time, time and distance. So I have a process that works for me, and it's a multi-step. I brainstorm with my assistant Janelle, I brainstorm with my agent, I come up with a pitch, I get that approved, and that's all happening while I'm writing another book. I don't get to just sit around and brainstorm. And then I go to, I plot with some other authors, we go away for a few days, and we seriously plot each other's books. So then when that's done, I write a synopsis, which is what I send in saying, this is what the book's about. It's about 20 pages, start to finish, of what it's going to be. Once that's done, it sits until it is time for me to write that book.
Okay.
And then I have a whole process of, you know, which is very detailed. And on, in a writing class, it's fascinating. But for the average person, they just need to know it takes some time.
Yeah.
Although I'm very happy to get into that, but no. And then once the book is done, it gets, I have a very weird brain, but one of the things my brain does is I don't see typos. My brain just fills in what the word should be. So I litter my manuscript. They're all spelled correctly because I do run spell check, but frequently it's the noun, verb, the verb noun tense isn't right. I leave off the S's.
Mm-hmm.
I just do all kinds of things. And so if I have time, in a perfect world, I finish my book, which is where I am now. It goes to the lovely Janelle, who reads it for typos. And she just fixes the typos and then sends it back, and off it goes. From there, the book will go to my editor and my agent and also back to Janelle. And then everybody gives me notes. Usually Janelle gives me the most. But I get notes and a line edit from my editor. I get notes from my agent, and I get notes and a line edit from Janelle. And then I combine those and do the revisions.
Oh, wow.
And then it goes, and then it becomes a book. I know everybody's like, well, you don't do revisions anymore. Alas, no, each word is not a pearl. Would that it was, but no. So, yeah, still do revisions. So in the meantime, when I'm writing my book, for example, I'm starting a new series called Happily Inc. The first two books are out this year. I'm writing book three for next year. And so I finished my trade book, and I like to let it sit if I have time in my schedule. And then I started this book, and then I went to my plotting group, came back, wrote the synopsis. Then the trade book had been sitting long enough, so I edited that, sent that off to Janelle to do the typos, and now I'm back. I started back on page 82, and I look at the pages and think, wow, this is really great. Who wrote this? Because it wasn't me. So then I have to go back and read from the beginning because it's been like 3 weeks, and I have no idea who these people are or what's happening. And then I reacquaint myself, and now I'm back in, and off I go until the book is done.
Wow.
Yeah, it is
a village.
An ongoing 6 or 7 day a week process. It's busy. It's really busy.
And you have a really good support system, though. That sounds like, you know, from the creative side and from the
mm-hmm.
you know, editing and structuring side. You know, you have a team here. You have a team here. That's a. I mean, it takes a village. And people think that a writer just sits down and writes a story.
Some do.
I
don't.
Part of it.
Yeah, some do. I mean, on a day to day basis. Yes, it's me and the keyboard, but, I tried Dragon, because they were, oh, why don't you dictate? I tried Dragon Speak. I do not understand. We don't communicate well, but I had, like, broken my elbow or something, so I used Dragon Speak to write a book. And the thrill of Dragon Speak is everything is spelled perfectly, but you can't find the typos by looking. You have to say it out loud because it doesn't make sense when you read it. But if you say it, and I thought I'd read everything, but so I send the book in, and my editor read it, and we were talking about it. And so when she was done with her notes, I said, so you think it's okay? And she said, yeah, why? And I said, well, I did it with Dragon Speak. She's like, oh, thank God, I thought you'd had a stroke. Because there were so many weird points. I'm like, okay, I won't do that again.
Substitute strange words for other words. Yeah.
Yeah. So if I get really, like right now, I'm finding, so these are the other things that happen in writer's life. Things like this phone call, which is very exciting because when I do Skype, it's like an hour of makeup. But here, it's just, I did shower sometime in the last 3 days.
Hey, I'm in my
pajamas. That's all you need
to know.
Don't
worry about it.
Yeah, I'm fine. Fully dressed. Don't worry about it. So, but I'm also signing special copies of the summer hardcover. So I literally have 6,000 sheets of paper that I have to sign. And then they get bound into the book. And that takes a really long time, and it's painful. And it's not my wrist that hurts because I can wear a wrist brace, and it's totally fine. It's my shoulder and my back because I'm writing really big because I'm trying to fill this page. And so it's the back spasms from that are going to get you. So I know. So I'm watching way too much afternoon television while I'm signing because that's when I do it. weird stuff is on. Really weird.
Yes.
People are strange.
Afternoons.
So that's that would be my reading time is now taken up signing.
Signing.
Yeah. I know. It's always something interesting.
It never ends. And you can't just, you know, I know that people think, why don't you just get a stamp? You can't do that. You can't do that. People want signed. They want it really signed.
Yeah, I know. I was just... people have asked me that. It's like, oh, no. Let me send you a picture of my very sexy wrist braces. This is real. No, because if it's digital, that's just, yes, and I have a couple that I have a picture of my cat sitting on, so a few of them are extra special.
Oh, well, blessed and baptized by the cat. So yeah.
Yes, exactly. So, and it's fun because I thought, should I do a scented lotion? And it's like, nobody wants to smell your lotion. No scented lotion. Stop. So, no, yes, here they are. I'm a third done. It's three boxes, I guess, of 2,000 each. So, yes, I've started the second box. Yay.
Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
Well, keep signing. We'll keep talking.
Had this been on a cell phone instead of a real landline, I would have been signing because I have a headset. But no, I'm just pacing.
Oh gosh.
I'm just pacing and occasionally going over and bugging the cats because.
Oh, well, there you go.
Lord knows they bug me all the time. So. It's the little hairs between their toes. You know, if you just touch them.
Sorry, my husband's poking his head in the door. I'm like, huh? Okay. Managing the mayhem in the other room. Okay.
Oh, I know.
So tell me a little bit, speaking of cats, about how you tend to put pets in your books.
I do.
But we love that. So it's a great thing. But talk to me about that. What do you think that pets add to, especially romantic stories? There's always, you know, pets always seem to add something special to the relationship between the couple. Or
I think so.
How it comes about.
Exactly. Or one of the things I really love is, you know, anybody can put a dollar in the Salvation Army and feel important. I think what we do in the dark is how we're really defined as people. And to me, pets are that moment. So what I love to do is to have the pet be a way to reveal character. For example, the book I have out now, A Million Little Things, there's a couple of pets, but the big one, the important one for me is Lulu. Lulu is a Chinese crested, and I don't know if your readers are familiar. They are the weirdest looking dogs. So they're naked, so it's just their multi little skin. And then I was thinking of them as rock star dogs. So they've got the fluffy plume of hair on their head and then the little leg warmers. And I investigated. My friend of mine sent me a card. And it's a Chinese crested wearing all this jewelry, which is bigger than the dog. It's just these necklaces. And then on the inside it says, "You will always be fabulous." And I kept it on my desk for like 3 years. And then one day I started doing research. And one of the things with Chinese crested is their teeth are so soft they can't eat kibble. It'll crack their teeth. It's like, this is not the dog for you. But I had to put Lulu in a book. And for me, she's weird looking. They all have skin issues. They have to wear sunscreen and or clothes. And so how a man reacts to that kind of dog will tell you who and what he is. And so that, to me, is the pet reveal. Do they accept pets? How do they react to something unexpected thrown into their world? And I had a book, The Best of My Love, where the hero decided to get a dog, and he went to a shelter. And he's an outdoor guy who, he has an adventure company. They do hiking and parasailing and camping and skiing. Mm-hmm. And he wants, a husky or a German shepherd or some big mutt dog. And he falls in love with a Bichon Frise named Charlie.
Aww.
And he's like, no, I cannot have this dog, this little fluffy white dog. He takes him for a walk and it's cold and the dog's it starts shaking, but it's going along. And so by the time he gets the dog, he takes it to the pet store, he buys it little dog booties so its little feet won't freeze. How can you not love that man? So I think the pets, they add a dimension of reality. And they add, as I said, it is what you do in the dark. If you take care of somebody else's pet, I've done that. That one was great. This macho hero got stuck with his mom's beagle for a month, and Sophie is nothing if not a troublemaker. And and so he's like, you are sleeping in the living room in your own bed, not with me. And within 30 minutes, Sophie is on the pillow next to him snoring. So, he's a good guy, and he's probably going to be a good dad. And as women, this is our romantic fantasy, that's the guy we want to find.
Oh, right. Absolutely. If they can handle a high-maintenance pet, then they can handle you and whatever comes
exactly.
after.
Hey, if they're comfortable dressing Lulu, then they'll probably go shoe shopping with you or not care that you go with friends.
Yeah, that's true. Boots for the dog. I just love that.
I know.
Anyway, speaking of a million little things, let's talk a little bit about your book that just came out on Tuesday, right?
It's been out a week, 2 weeks.
Okay.
It's been out 2 weeks.
2 weeks, okay. So this is a standalone, and it is strong about – it has strong themes about relationships between the females, the female character and her – So tell me a little bit, did you have any kind of – I love the cover with the three of them because it just, to me, the cover just tells gives you a big taste about what's in the story. But I was reading the snippet about it and about Zoe.
I know, I love Zoe.
I think a lot of us have been there. Like, we're that friend where everybody else is, they're married, they have kids, and this is going on, and, everything else, and that she's beginning to think that being alone sounds so bad after all. But did you have an inspiration for this? Was there some show or anything in real life, or did you come up with this storyline? It just reminds me of the great shows with the women friends and.
One of the things I enjoy is connecting the books, and this is actually part of a series called Mischief Bay, and they're very, very loosely, they're only connected by location. I've done some characters have come back, but these specifically do read completely like a standalone. So I had a couple of things. We'd met Jen a couple of books ago. We'd met Pam. Mm-hmm. 2 books ago was The Girls of Mischief Bay. And it was 3 primary women, and Pam was one of them. And in that book, she lost her husband unexpectedly. Mm. And so 2 years later, we meet up with her again and see how she's doing. And plus, I got to write about Lulu again. So Jen was her daughter, and I think we, as you say, you know, we all know some of these women. I've had more than one friend who has been like hyper aware of everything about their child and truly helicopter parents. And I started thinking, at what point does that, you know, we don't want that, whatever that, what is that, Munchausen by proxy thing? We don't want that far.
Munchausen, yeah.
Yeah, Munchausen by proxy. But we, there is a place where helicopter parenting becomes a problem. But I also
yeah.
I'm a huge fan of the Tiger Mom. I think that's fabulous. So somewhere in that line is a safe line, but it's a narrow safe line, and it's very easy to step off into another direction. So I thought that was interesting. And then I think anyone who has ever lived alone has always, you read those articles about the people who die and are mummified. could that be me? And so
yeah.
I just, that's sort of where that all came from. And then as I was developing the novel, it started to get really, I was going to say twisted, but that's wrong, intertwined. So Pam is Jen's mother. Jen is
mm-hmm.
Zoe's best friend.
Okay.
And Jen is the one with the kid and is a little bit, she has some problems with, she's got about a 9 or 10 month old who won't talk. And she knows something's wrong, and she's having him tested to the point where she goes to see the lady who wants to snip his hair. And it's like, don't do that, honey. Just step away. Take a breath. And I remember years ago when a friend had a baby, and it's like you practically have to wear the hazmat suit to step into the house. By the
yeah.
fourth one, it's like, yeah, we only wrapped fish in that. It's fine. And I find that transition – I think we all do that. You can't help
uh-huh.
it, the first one, but I find that fascinating. And then Zoe is the single friend, and I've been the single friend of the first, you know, the first one who got married, and then you're all like, oh, well,
mm-hmm.
but she's married. And then the first one, Deb, oh, well, she had a baby now. and so there's a sense of, you know, is this leaving me behind? Am I supposed to care about her kid as much? And then if you don't care as much, are you bad? But it's like, could we please talk about something that isn't your child and their poop? My God, I'm tired of this. So that was a lot of what I wanted to explore. And then it just got fun because Zoe starts dating Jen's brother, who is also Pam's son. Pam starts dating Zoe's father. And suddenly friends and family are just way too intertwined. And then all
yeah.
you have to do is the author is just like tweak one of them and it totally explodes.
Right.
So it was great fun for me.
It sounds like a fun one because I was thinking about Pam and Zoe's father and how awkward that has got to be for her.
Well, and the best part is her son, Stephen, is very concerned because Pam, his mother, married when she was really young, and his dad was the only man she'd ever been with, and now he's trying to have the sex talk with his mother, who is not interested, and he's trying to, you know, he's done his research, he's a good kid, he's like, Mom, do you know the fastest growing population with STDs is people over 55? And Pam being Pam, she's like, when you have pushed me out of your vagina, we can have this conversation. Until
Amen.
Then, no. So I love them all. The women were very strong and very committed to their paths, and they were just fun. So, yes.
That sounds like a really good one. I'm going to have to pass that one to my mom, too. She'll enjoy
oh,
that
yeah.
one.
Oh, yeah. No, I enjoy them. And then one of the characters from that book, a secondary character named Lucas, turns up in the one I just finished.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I know.
So
he was a really interesting. Okay, so he's 50. He's
uh-huh.
gorgeous, but 50. He's a detective, and he dates girls between the ages of 21 and 23 who have names
Whoa.
Like Bambi and Crystal and Desiree. And I
oh,
thought,
my.
I need to find out, and we never find out why. And they're always different.
Mm-hmm.
And the more I knew about him, the more I thought, I have got to find out what his story is. I have no idea who he is or why he's doing this, but there has to be a reason. And anyway, so, yeah, he was fun to pull through.
Interesting. Do you find that a lot when you're developing a story that another character really that you like that?
Sometimes they do, and they'll just be like one sentence. And I'm like, oh, wow. In fact, the book I'm writing now, I plot my books in advance, a fairly detailed outline. And there's a character who I haven't even written them yet. They just showed up in the outline, and I'm going to make up her name because I can't remember what it is, but it's Palace's new assistant, Julie, had a stick up her butt and nobody likes her. And I'm like, ooh, who is she? So I have a feeling whatever her name is in the book, but she's going to be getting her. Oh, and at the business she works in, she's a wedding planner. That's an interesting choice if you have a stick up your butt that you go work as a wedding planner.
Right.
So,
I'm
very much looking forward to meeting whoever, I forget what her real name is, but whatever her name is, and I very well might be writing a book about her.
Interesting. Well, mm-hmm. Let's see how it does that. And that's the creative process is, you know, it's like it opens floodgates for more and more and more when you get into it. And that's how you, you know, I mean, it's hard to control. I'm sure you figured it out over all these years, I'm sure. But, you know, for new writers who start to write and then they start getting those little, oh, what about her? What about him? Oh, there's a good story and things like that. It's very hard because that's where I am. And every time I start writing, I come up with something else. And it has to do with what I'm already writing or it's just a whole other idea. But it's like you open up those creative floodgates and you just can't control them anymore. Got to learn how to shut them off.
Yeah. there are techniques. One of my suggestions is keep a folder, write it down, stick it in the folder, and move on.
Move on.
Yeah, you've got to stay focused on, let them go. But, yes, and I can tell almost right away, yes, I'd love to write this person's story, no. And I've had readers ask for characters. It's like, I hated her. She does not deserve a book. She is not getting a book. She's bad. No. So, yeah, I have strong opinions about them. Because I have to spend a lot of time with them 3 or 4 months.
Yeah.
Sometimes we have sex.
Right.
I need to have a relationship
intimately,
with these people. Yeah. Yes, a lot of times, and this is mostly men asking, why are the men so good looking? Because they're naked. That's why. I'm shallow. I choose to have them attractive. We're all going to have sex together. I want them to be pretty.
Right. That's right. It's a threesome every time with you. So, hey.
Yes, it is. And I think about the erotica people who write, you know, five. It's like, do you know how many people are in that room? It's really crowded.
Never thought about it that way. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah, because we're always there.
Next time I read a menage, I'll be like, whoa.
There's actually 4 people
there?
Here.
These 3 people? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, very interesting. Very interesting. So what do you have another book coming out next month. Is that correct?
I have some reissues coming out. My next original release will be in July, and it's The Secrets of the Tulip Sisters.
Oh,
and
interesting.
That was really fun. That went places I did not plan to go. It takes place in the Washington state, a little bit north between Seattle and the Canadian border. Is in real life, it's called LeConnor, and it's where tulips are grown. And every spring they have a festival, and it's like every time we go, it's so amazing. I have to set a book here. So I finally set a book there. Although I do it after the festival. So I learned all about how to grow tulips. There are some really cool, and we won't get into the equipment, but it's like, wow. And then I'm totally obsessed with the tiny house shows on HGTV.
Oh, yeah.
And so one of the heroes designs tiny homes because then I got to buy a book on them and read all about them. So that was fun. So it's about sisters, estranged sisters and their best friend and who they love and how it is complicated. So, and this is one of the times where there was this guy, Sven, and I knew he was going to be a love interest for the younger sister, Olivia, but I really didn't know much about him. I knew he designed, you know those, you can buy a mat, it's like a garden, you unroll it, you water it, and plants grow. Well, he designed really nice, exotic versions of that with unexpected, I don't know what they call it. Pairings is wrong, but whatever. And mm-hmm. so I really didn't know much about him, and he evolved into this hysterical character, and very sexy. And he asked Olivia if she can help with his website because he doesn't really know very much about it. And all she can think of is SvenTheVikingGod.com. So we had to buy that. So I believe we own it with dashes. And then the Tulip Sisters, Secrets of the Tulip Sisters, I always do a sub-website because I just think for readers who want more, it's out, like the Mischief mm-hmm. Bay books, The Million Little Things, and all of those. Mm-hmm. If you go onto SusanMallory.com, you can find each of my series. And it's everything silly. It's maps and character stuff and recipes and just whatever seemed fun when I was writing the book got developed for that. But if you go to the Secrets of the Tulip Sisters through my website, there's you can click on Sven the Viking God, and there's some great drawings. It's just I would just say when it says click, honey, go ahead and click.
Okay.
So they're just adorable. We found this great artist, Travis, who is so incredibly talented, and he's bringing these people. Anyway, I have the best time.
That makes it fun, though. All the, you know, bringing all the pictures up with it and maps and
mm-hmm.
things. You know, it's real to us when we read it. So, yeah, it makes it a lot of fun for the reader.
I think so. I hope so. I hope it does. But it's just, yeah, there's a lot of, I do a lot of really fun things. There's in the book I'm writing now, there's a Batman-themed wedding. So let me just say whoever the comic people is, oh, and I should know, it's either Marvel or DC. They are very strict. So
yeah,
it's not going
DC.
To be a Batman-themed movie. But in the meantime.
Yeah, you can't say Batman.
No, but I can say a Dark Knight Rises movie title-themed wedding. Yeah. Yeah, I've talked to lawyers about some really weird stuff. So on Etsy, you can get all this really cool Batman stuff. So I have a bridal bouquet made out of paper from pages of a Batman comic.
Oh, my gosh.
It's going to be in the wedding, but I had to have it. I had to own it, and then we'll be giving it away. But, yes, I have it. I'm touching it as
awesome.
We speak. It is so fabulous. And you can, like, look into the petals of the flowers. It's really the comics. It's
That's
people
me.
Are incredibly talented. I mean, yes,
yeah,
I can write
yeah.
a book. But she made this whole bouquet out of DC comic pages. It's like a magical thing.
It is. It
so,
is.
Yeah.
And I mean, and there are people out there that really would use it. So.
Yes, well, yes, because she's doing it. And so, and she wanted all these notes about my wedding and stuff, and I just said, it's a gift. I just didn't want it. I just, you know, sometimes they look
Don't
at you
there.
Like, oh, great, crazy people. Keep away from her.
Excellent. So the best way for people to keep in touch with you is really to join your newsletter, or they can join the – You have a members
yes,
club.
Yes, if you go to SusanMallory.com, you can sign up for the mailing list. We don't sell it or give it away or do anything like that. You hear from me like twice a month. It's not labor intensive to get them. And also, I'm very active on Facebook. We do a lot of contests and a lot of interactive stuff. One of the things I do on Facebook that is wonderful for me but also incredibly fun is the downside of having written as many books as I have is I run out of names. So I will ask people to name things. And if I use your suggestion, I will put your last name in my book. So town
That's
names.
Fun.
It is. Stores, characters, pets. And sometimes it's things like, I want the name for a bitchy ex-wife. Let me be clear, this is not someone you're going to like. So only volunteer your name with the understanding she's a horrible person. I'll get like 100 people saying,
oh,
and some
wow.
of them, if they say, oh, use my sister-in-law, no, we're not going to do that. But I'll use, you know, if somebody says, oh, use me. So, but I do that kind of stuff, so the interaction is fabulous. But, yes, the mailing list will tell you when books are coming out. And my publisher is lovely, and they'll do things like give me a coupon that I can send to my mailing list. So you can use the coupon or special
mm-hmm.
codes, and we do that kind of thing. So it's, no, it's fun. It's interact. I'm on Facebook every single day. Yay. Hanging out and answering questions, posting pet pictures.
Because that's what Facebook is for, posting pet pictures.
Oh, yeah. And if you'd seen my cat sleeping, you'd know why, with on the back and the little feet curled. He has this giant pillow, no, sprawl across my desk. So, yeah.
That's what cats do. I mean, yeah. It's got to be inconvenient for you.
Absolutely.
Otherwise, it's not any fun. Yeah, understand. Well,
so
thank you so much for being. I am so honored that you've been on the show, and super excited about the new series coming out, and just keeping up with your prolific writing. So,
well, thank you.
Thanks.
This has been great, and we all writers appreciate what you do. It makes a big difference to
us.
So, thank you.
Well, I love to do anything I can to get good writing out to people who are looking for something. So that's what librarians do.
I know, and we appreciate it.
Well, thanks, and I hope your spring warms up and you aren't too iced in on the West Coast, or washed out anyway.
We're
apparently
just washed out here in Seattle. It's cold and rainy. It's 72 everywhere else. I know.
Yeah, it was here today. You have a. I'm not gonna say it. Yes, it was here today. Have a great evening, and
you
catch
too,
a cat
thank
for
you.
Me.
I
no,
will.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
All right, take care. Bye bye.
And thanks everybody for listening in tonight. And if you missed my intro, I'm Tabitha Pope. I'm your host, and this is a copyrighted and trademarked podcast, owned solely by the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network, LLC, on the web at authorsontheair.com. We have about 17 different shows in different genres, so check them out at authorsontheair.com. Sweet dreams, and see you next Thursday.